भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। महति कुलशील रूपा विद्यावयो जविनदं मुबिरत्मतुयम् दिरापतिं कुलवती नवनित कन्या कले नृसिंह नरलोकमनोभिरामम् प्लीज त्वा यु मुकुंद ओ कृष्ण Mahati, aristocratic, Kula, in terms of family background, Shila, character, Rupa, beauty. Vidya, knowledge, Vaya, youth. Dravina, property. Dhammabhi, an influence. Atma, to yourself only. Tulyam, equal. Dira, okay, let's go over the first two lines here first. It's quite wonderful and poetic. Katva makunda mati kulasila rupa vidya vayo javinadam abhirat matuyam. So who? After, twa means what? Anyone remember?
You.
So who? Basically, after understanding you, O Makunda, what does Makunda mean? There's many meanings of Mukunda.
Giver
of liberation. And also another one. He whose face is blossoming like a kunda flower. I believe a kunda flower is jasmine. Krishna's face is blossoming and quite wonderful. Opened and freshly, fragrantly beautiful. So after understanding you, O Mukunda, who gives liberation from this world, all those who prefer to stay in the material world and enjoy here, raise your hand. Okay? Step onto that side. While you can go out that side. All those who would prefer to be free from the miseries of material world, raise your hand. Yeah, I believe that's everyone. Because really, the material world, it must be a miserable place. It's like the pleasure of the material world is like the bait on a fish hook. And the poor fish, who is always hungry, he has a tongue that is always demanding food, but what doesn't he have? Yes, that's the point. He's pretty foolish. Why is he foolish? You're laughing at the poor fish. How about the poor fellow in the white shutter? You should laugh at him. Why is the fish foolish?
Because he can't see there's a hook.
No, that would mean his vision is really bad. But why is he foolish?
keeps body, even though he gets hooked?
Yeah, he gets hooked. Even if he can see it, whether he can or can't, next time I'll get a fish body, I'll send you an email and let you know whether he can see it or not. But he bites it regardless. Whether he sees it, he doesn't see it, he bites the hook. Why? Because he wants to taste something and enjoy it. Now that is foolish. Because for the little bit of pleasure, I mean, how much pleasure is there after all in eating a worm? There's not very much. But because of that irresistible for him desire for pleasure, look what his fate is. And just imagine what it would be like to have get your mouth caught in a hook and someone is reeling you in by your So is it worth it? That is the question. Well, that is a question. Is it actually worth it? And the answer is no, it is not worth it. It's obvious it's not worth it. For a little bit of pleasure, there's practically speaking unlimited pain. Yes, improvement. We always encourage improvement. That's the teacher's definition of a student is doing well. He's improving. That means also including tomorrow has to be improving. So after seeing you, O Mukunda, O beautiful Lord who gives liberation, there's two sides of this. He frees one from material suffering, and also he's so beautiful. His face is blossoming like a jasmine Mukunda flower. Who, after understanding you, O Mukunda, who is comparable, this Atmatulyam, that's the final verse in the second line, this final word, Atmatulyam, who is comparable only to yourself in your qualities. We cannot compare you to anyone else because no, your qualities that she's going to name, Rukmini Devi is going to name, is so far above anyone else's that the comparison would be foolish to make. It's like comparing a poor man to a billionaire. It's saying they're both wealthy. You're as wealthy, saying to the billionaire that you're as wealthy as a poor man. So to compare Krishna to anything in this material world actually is a terrible comparison. But what can we do? You have to compare to understand the unknown, something that we don't really have an experience of. All we can do is compare it to that which we do have an experience of. And there's, in Sanskrit, there's a nyaya logical, Chandra Shaka Nyaya, which means what? What does Chandra mean? Moon and Shaka. Not friend, but branch. So when you say there's the moon, you say, someone says to you, where is the moon? And you say, oh, look at that branch. It's just above the branch of the tree. But actually, as we well know, the moon is so far from the branch of the tree, thousands and thousands of miles away from the branch of the tree. But this gives away that a person who can't see the moon or find the moon can get a glimpse of it, understand something about where it is. It's just above the branch. So now, after seeing you, O Mukunda, who is comparable, Atmatulyam, what does Atmatulyam mean? comparable to himself only. He's so wonderful. You can't compare him to anything else, practically speaking. But we have to compare him to things, the known, because his beauty is unknown. Because it is infinite, unlimited. And just imagine what that means. This type of imagining is very good. If you think of something or someone that's beautiful in this world, this is limited beauty. But just think of how beautiful is a person who has unlimited beauty. Think.
Unfailing.
Huh?
Unfailing.
Yes, but we should try. He has unlimited beauty. Just think of what that means. And just think of it, what it means if that one who has unlimited beauty passes before your eyes. How could you not be attracted? And not only is he unlimitedly beautiful, he's unlimitedly powerful. Think of what that means. There is no limit to his beauty. There is no limit to his power. That means creating a universe with its tens of thousands of millions of billions of trillions of planets, countless planets, that's nothing for him. That doesn't take even a smallest fraction of his power, because he's unlimitedly powerful. Inconceivably powerful. Unfathomably powerful. So this is Krishna. So once having glimpsed Krishna, she says, who is comparable, Atmatulyam, what does Atmatulyam mean? Only to himself. So here are the qualities she's going to mention, that he has to such an unlimited degree that we practically can't compare him to anything. It's just unlimitedly. He's unlimitedly mahati, aristocratic. Kula in terms of family background. Shila, his character, is incomparably wonderful. Rupa, his beauty, is incomparably beautiful. His vidya, his knowledge, he has incomparable knowledge. Vaya, his youthfulness, fresh youthfulness. Incomparably, how fresh and youthful. But Krishna is Navayovanam. That means he's always, forever youthful. You never see a picture of Krishna as an old, wrinkly old man walking around with his cane like that, you know, holding on to his bad hip, replacing his knee. No, because he's always youthful in the fresh blooming of his youth. There's a certain pride that comes to an embodied person who is in the fresh blooming youth of his life. Because at that time, 14, 15, 16, one is at the top of the world. Strong, beautiful, these qualities. And just as there is a certain pride that inhabits the mind of a youth, there's a certain humility, either humility or cynicism, that inhabits the mind of an old or young, excuse me, an old man or lady. Because there's nothing to be proud of anymore. It's all wrinkly. It's all falling apart before your very eyes, confronting you. Look in the mirror. Now, foolishness is we think it won't happen to us. And especially in this culture, as Prabhupada would generally phrase when he would speak of this, the contemporary culture, or contemporary so-called civilization, he always says so-called, because it is called a culture, it is called a civilization, but actually it's quite uncivilized. Because it lives, its standards are of as if no one would ever become old. It places this illusion, it makes the heroes, who in the Vedic culture, or in any legitimate culture, who is given the most value and attention? It's the sages, the wise sages, who are learned in Shastra and wise in life, means they know how to apply it. They get the attention. Wherever they go, they are respected. But now, it is not like that. And it is the youth who gets all the attention. And everyone, or the rest of society, becomes envious of the youth, practically speaking. Why don't we become envious in a positive sense? Envious means they want to be that. They want to be youthful. When you're 10, when you're 5, you want to be 8. When you're 8, you want to be 10. When you're 10, you want to be 12. When you're 12, you want to be 16. When you're 16, you want to be, if you can drive anyway, or something like that, you want to be 16.
18.
But when you're 18, well, you want to be, it starts going backwards at some point. When you're 22, you want to be 18. When you're 32, you want to be, starts going back. But there's something so glorious in being elderly if one has cultivated spiritual life. If one uses one's life to cultivate spiritual values, then, and if one is sincere about that, by the time one is older, one is very wise, and it is beneficial for the youth to grow up listening to the wisdom of the elderly. And this specifically is what modern culture is missing. The leaders in society, the people who are naturally the leaders, who have wisdom to pass on, they are not the ones leading the society. It is foolish people, and become envious. And those who are envious of the young. And what happens when you want to be like the young? When you're an old man, then you have to take that kind of a birth again. Again and again and again and again, reborn in the material world, and have to suffer the frustrations that the young suffer. Because the vision that they are given is incorrect. And that basic vision is that life is meant for sense enjoyment. And to get sense enjoyment, one needs money, economic development. And therefore, economic development, how to get a good J-O-B, is the purpose of education. Completely misdirected. Because what happens if one succeeds on that path? You get a very good education. And then you get a very good job. And you get lots because unless you have money, you cannot enjoy. This is the law of, because money means Shakti, it means power. Money is Lakshmi. Lakshmi Devi is the Shakti of Krishna. So education leads us to this. Modern so-called civilization, misdirected, leads us to getting job, economic development, education, economic development, and ultimately leading to sense enjoyment, which is temporary, adyantavantakantaya, nateshu ramate Buddha, the wise person, does not make his delight on this level. Why is he wise? Because he has seen. He can see in the value of intelligence. As you can see around the corner, you can see the future. You don't only see what's in front of you. You see, like Buddha. Buddha means wise, intelligent, one who has buddhi, or knowledge. So what did he see? What was the primary push for him to become intelligent and wise? Is because he was young, a young prince. Prince means you can enjoy life because your father is the king. Who's going to stop you? You get what you want, wealth, the armies, everything is at your disposal, your enemies, finished. You can do whatever you want, but he was a young prince and he saw, when he was out one day, he saw, what is that? This is an old person. Will I become old? Yes. What is that? This is a diseased person. Will I become diseased? Yes. And there is a dead body. Is that the ultimate result of my body, the ultimate conclusion of this life? Yes. Well, then I don't want to have anything to do with materialistic life, because that is the ending. Death is the ending. Therefore, intelligent, he could see the future. He caught a glimpse of the future of the materialistic path and didn't want to have anything to do with it. Because the end of the materialistic path is simply death of the material body. So it goes youth, education, wealth, sense enjoyment, and then death. Is that the path we want to walk on? Not if we are if we have buddhi or intelligence, it certainly isn't. What is that? You know, the famous the Pied Piper. You know the Pied Piper? This is Western mythology. Who knows the story of the Pied Piper? Yes. What happened to the Pied Piper? There were rats in the town, and he blew his pan flute, and the rats followed him out of the town, and just right one after another, over the cliff, over the cliff, over the cliff, over the cliff, to death. No buddhi. They were enchanted by the maya of his pan flute. We should not be enchanted by that maya, that flute. There is another flute that we should become enchanted by. So who, Rukmini Devi says, after seeing you, O Mukunda, who is coming from the most aristocratic family background, who has the most wonderful character. What does it mean? What do we mean when we say character? Not in the sense of this person's a real character. Not in that sense.
Personality.
Okay, but personality, character is part of personality, I would say. Yeah? Integrity, you know, characteristics. He has strong character. Strong character, weak character. What's the difference? If we say someone has strong character, what kind of a person is he? He has high integrity. That, what does integrity mean? How would I know? You're asking the wrong person. Yeah. What does integrity mean? Huh?
No gap between words and action.
Yeah. That, not words and actions only, but one's values. What one values and states by his words that he values, and then how he acts. They are the same. That's integrity. When one is true to one's values, completely consistent. Is it difficult to have integrity in this world? Is it difficult to have high character in this world? Yes. Why? Because Maya is very powerful. Maya will test us to see what we really want in life. Maya will test us. Maya does test us. And so often, we pass those tests very easily. Yes? And sometimes, every once in a while, we don't do so well in living up to what we truly believe is correct. But we should always keep trying. And character means that if one has good character, that means his ethics are good. He will deal properly in the material world. And ethics is, practically speaking, it means your philosophy applied to life. How you deal in the material world, your philosophy applied to life. It's a, ethics a very, very interesting subject. Now, how does the Krishna conscious philosophy, which is very high, apply in it to the ethics of our everyday dealings? In our dealings with others, our dealings amongst our own community, with the outside world. What is the ethics? How does the philosophy of Krishna consciousness appear on the practical dealings in this world level? Prabhupada once said, was asked, how will your followers be recognized? And he said, He said they will be gentlemen, and of course gentle ladies. And another time he asked, what would the purpose of Gurukula's education? To make them honest brahmacharis, even very, very chaste in mind and actions. And honest. Because how can you be honest in this world? How could you be ethical in this world? Only if you have something of the greatest value that you won't trade for anything. In the material world, purpose of life, you get educated. And you get after you get educated, there's economic development, you make money, and what do you trade your money for? That's what happens. You go into a store and you trade your money, your plastic pieces of, what do you trade that for? Something that you're going to enjoy. So someone who is on a deep level of Krishna consciousness will not trade his Krishna consciousness, his wealth, for anything that this material world has to offer. There is nothing that the material world has to offer that a deep devotee will trade his Krishna consciousness for. Therefore, someone on the deepest level, like Thakur Haridas, Maya Devi herself came to him. In the middle of the night, no witnesses. And she could not tempt him because he was experiencing Krishna, the person, through Krishna, the holy name. That, of course, is an exalted position. So she's saying, your qualities are atmatulyam, they are comparable to the degree that you have beauty, the degree that you have character, the degree you have knowledge, influence via your youth, your freshly never fading youth, like the blossoming of a flower that never fades. Dravina, your property, and your Dhamma B, your influence, is Atmatulyam. What does Atmatulyam mean? No one can compare to you. You are comparable. You, O Krishna, are only as you are as beautiful as Krishna. Because there is no one as beautiful as Krishna. So we'll read the first half. Of this verse again, and then we'll move to the second half. O Mukunda, you are equal only to yourself in lineage, character, beauty, knowledge, youthfulness, wealth, and influence. This is attractive. This is what Rukmini Devi is saying. And Dira. Okay, now we're going through the word by words. That's what we were doing. Dira.
Dira.
Who is sober?
Who is sober?
Patim,
Patim
as her husband.
Kulavati,
Kulavati
of a good family.
Navrnita
would not choose.
Kanya,
Kanya,
marriageable young lady.
Kale,
at such a time. Nri,
among men.
Singha.
Lion.
O lion amongst men. Nrisingha, O lion amongst men. A lion is unstoppable. Powerful. The king of the jungle. O lion amongst men. O Nrisingha. Naraloka.
Of human society.
Mana.
To the minds.
Abhiraman,
who give pleasure.
O Mukunda, you are equal only to yourself in lineage, character, beauty, knowledge, youthfulness, wealth, and influence. O lion among men, you delight the minds of all mankind. In this world, all of mankind, which includes all of womankind altogether, because we are all kind. That's what we have in common. Krishna gives delight to the mind. And we tend, under the influence of the pan flute of Maya, to be following all the rest of the rats over the cliff. Seeking delight, but not finding delight. Evam janam na prapatitam prabhavari kupam jana janam manayatta papam pasangam. Prahlad glorifies Narada Muni in this way. He said, I was following the path of everyone else and falling, he uses the example, not over a cliff, but into a blind well, a well in the middle of a field that's far away from the village. And if I fall in that well that's so deep and I can't get out of it, on my own, and I could cry out and I cry out and no one can hear me. That means my life is ended. And it is filled with snakes and scorpions and whatever. And rocks on the bottom when I fall there. That was my fate. Surishina, oh sage amongst the rishis, Narada Muni. So he's thanking Narada Muni for having pulled him out of that well. So what aristocratic, sober-minded, and manageable girl of a good family would not choose you as her husband? when the proper time has come. So that has to do with that Krishna, he is, that point had to do with he gives pleasure to the mind. Mana abhiramam. He gives pleasure to the mind because of the qualities that she has mentioned before. You alone are capable of pleasing the mind of all of mankind, of all women, of everyone. And we tend to look in other places for the pleasure for our mind and senses, and we end up just getting frustrated because we are looking for gold in a place where there is no gold. We are looking for satisfaction in a place where there is no satisfaction. Adyantavantakantaya nateshu ramate buddha. In a place where a wise person does not look. A place, not a place where there is a beginning and an end to everything. Puna avatuna arjuna. Again and again. And how many times do we have to learn this lesson? How many times? So please repeat the verse. O Mukunda, you are equal only to yourself in lineage, character, beauty, knowledge, youthfulness, wealth, and influence. O lion amongst men, you delight the minds of all mankind. Even it is the reflection of Krishna's beauty, a reflection of Krishna's land of Vrindavan, a reflection of Krishna's pastimes in Goloka Vrindavan, that is in this world, and we are attracted by the reflection. So just imagine how wonderful the actual object is. Just imagine, just see. Kamutyanaya, if the material world is so attractive and so alluring, just imagine how attractive Goloka Vrindavan is, which is free from the inebrieties of the material world. It is the land of what? Vrindavan is the land of
Krishna.
Yes, it's the land of Krishna. And what else is it the land of? What else is there in Vrindavan? Huh? Devotees of Krishna, such as
Radharani.
Srimati Radharani and Krishna are there. And what else is in Vrindavan? And who else is in Vrindavan? Govardhan Hill is in Vrindavan, who gives nourishment to all of Krishna's pastimes and people. What else is in Vrindavan?
Cows.
So many cows. It is Goloka. It is the land of cows. And what happens when you're around cows? Yeah, immediately the mind becomes peaceful. I recommend everyone should bring a cow into their room. And Krishna loves the cows. And you know what? The cows and calves love Krishna. So much so that when Krishna was young, under 5 years old, when he used to take care of the calves, he used to take care of the calves and wander around the Gokul area, and when they were in Chatikara area, he would just take care of the calves, and he would wander to the nearby village places where, and then Agasura came. Agasura is also there, but he's dismissed. But then, And the cows, just think how happy they were that we are going with Krishna, our beloved Krishna. And he's taking care of us and frolicking with us. But then when Krishna became a little older, 5 years old, he was given charge of the cows. And cows wander far, and calves have to stay close because they're dependent on their mothers for their milk, for their sustenance. So then Krishna was given care of the cows. So what do you think the calves thought? What do you think? You think, oh, how nice Krishna's now gone. Huh? Yes, and what did that cause them to do? They said, no way we're going to be left behind. We're not going to not go with Krishna. There was no way that the elderly cowherd men could stop the calves from going with Krishna. Even though they weren't supposed to, because they were hopelessly addicted to being with Krishna. And that's really what we want. There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter. Does anyone know which verse that I'm going to read? Anyone have mind reading abilities or Bhagavad Gita reading abilities? Almost. Vishaya virivartante niraharasya dehina rasavarjam rasopyasya param drisvanavartate. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment. Please repeat. Now, if he has a taste for sense enjoyment, is that pleasurable or difficult? It's difficult. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remain. So he has a taste for sense objects, but he's restricted. Is it possible for him to maintain that? But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. This is the only way one can actually maintain that fixedness in our attempt in bhakti. Is that if we get param raso varjam raso pasya, we have to immerse ourselves in a higher taste that comes from the process of bhakti and bhakti yoga, the process of devotional service, which includes hearing, chanting, remembering so many things, padasevanam, archanam, vandanam, atmanavedanam, different services that we do during the day. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Unless one is transcendentally situated, it is not possible to cease from sense enjoyment. We can vow from now on I'm not going to think about this or want to do that. We can vow from day to night and it will be insufficient. The process of restriction from sense enjoyment by rules and regulations is something like restricting a diseased person from a certain type of eatables. The patient, however, neither likes such restrictions nor loses his taste for the eatables. Similarly, sense restriction by some spiritual process like Astanga Yoga in the matter of Yam Niyam, Asana, Pranayam, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyan is recommended for less intelligent persons who have no better knowledge. But one who has tasted the beauty of Krishna, of the Supreme Lord Krishna, in the course of his advancement in Krishna consciousness, no longer has a taste for dead material things. A person who has tasted in the course of one's advancing in Krishna consciousness, if somehow or another tastes the beauty of Krishna. Usually we taste with our tongue and see with our and see beauty with our eyes. Yes? We don't taste with our eyes, mm-hmm. and we don't see with our tongue. Mm-hmm. But taste the beauty of Krishna. Experience the beauty of Krishna. Through what's the process? Through one's advancement in Krishna consciousness. Through mercy. Then such a person, no longer as a taste, but dead, material things. Because matter indeed has no life to it. And we are alive, we are souls, we are not matter. And for us to taste, we have to taste from life, not from dead matter. And that is the frustration. We look for a taste in the realm of dead matter, trying to exploit dead matter, and end up frustrated because we are alive. We are souls. We are alive. Therefore, restrictions are there for the less intelligent neophytes in the spiritual advancement of life. But such restrictions are only good until one actually has a taste in Krishna consciousness. We must. It is essential that we get a taste if we wish to spiritually survive. The whole process is to increase our taste, our attachment for Krishna. And that will dull, nullify whatever tendencies we have to try to exploit the world of dead matter for our pleasure. Get our education, get our job, learning, money, for sense enjoyment, which is dead. Frustration and death. When one is actually Krishna conscious, he automatically loses his taste for pale things. So we want to become actually Krishna conscious, not superficially Krishna conscious. If we become superficially conscious, Krishna conscious, our taste will be superficial. But the pull of Maya is very strong, and a superficial taste will be insufficient to withstand. What to speak of, to ward off terror when it's the time of death. Yeah? So we want to, when we talk about strong in Krishna consciousness, we mean strong in the practices that will give us the taste that we so much long for. This is what we're longing for, like a drowning man longs for air. And like a starving man longs for, and like a thirsty man, parched man on the desert, wandering in the desert, longs for, and like a poverty-stricken man longs for. Similarly, if we can just develop a little longing, then we are very fortunate, because that longing will allow us to take a next step in the proper direction, and a next step, and a next step. But if we long for the things of the material world, that longing will cause us to take us steps in that direction. Because it's a step towards what? The edge of the cliff. Like the rats who will join the other rats going off the cliff. And as Prabhupada even said, when he was very ill in his last days, last months, last year. And when someone's very ill, there's a tendency to, when their bodies are decrepit, a tendency to step back from them, not to want to be very close. So Prabhupada detected something in one of his followers of that. And he said, don't think that this isn't going to happen to you. So we shouldn't think that we're not going, even though I didn't think it was going to happen to me, but golly gee, it's happening right before my very eyes and before everyone else's eyes too. You can learn from it's happening. It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. It's happening. But we're thinking like the goats in the slaughterhouse, who, you know, they're lined up to get their head chopped off, and there's one goat, his head's on the block, and there's another goat behind him, and another goat behind him, and another goat behind him, and we're thinking, and we see the one goat in front of us gets his head cut off, and we think, whew, that was close. Prabhupada told that little story. Why do we laugh at the foolish goat? Huh? He's next. Next in line. We don't know what our number is. A little fear put in the end of the lecture here. Sorry about that. But the most important thing is the positive, really. But yet there has to be a little push from behind by the realities of the material world, otherwise we don't get so serious. But if it's just that, there's no room for love. And bhakti, Krishna consciousness is all about bhakti, means love for Krishna. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you very much. This Pete, there is no purport, but will you read, there's a nice little purport here. Should we keep this verse on? Okay, we'll keep this verse on. There's a nice purport of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's. So you don't have to change it. And if it's not enough, you can go on to the next verse. Any questions or comments?
As you said, the reality is because we are spiritual, no amount of material happiness will ever make us happy.
Prabhupada has said, and I have experienced, and yet, janiya shunya bishakainam. The tendency is to want to drink poison. Yes.
The comment from Bhagavad Gita was that such rules and regulations, restrictions are good.
Yes.
If one has a taste.
No, as
I was listening.
I'm sorry, wait 1 second. Just let me just get the reference exactly. Yes.
My mind was following you, and when you go through such rules and regulations, what I would have placed there was necessary or essential or unavoidable.
I'm sorry, or unavoidable.
Yes. And then so when Srila Prabhupada's word used the choice was good, that seemed to imply the opposite of good is bad. Does that mean anyone has a taste?
Well, let me just read it. Therefore, restrictions are there for the less intelligent neophytes in the spiritual advancement of life. But such restrictions are only good until one actually has a taste in Krishna consciousness.
So, some restrictions are bad when one has a taste in Krishna consciousness?
Required. Or only because, but see, this is the next line explains it. Why? Let me just put the word required in there, and then the next line will make sense. Therefore, restrictions are there for spiritual advancement in life, but such restrictions are only required until one actually has a taste in Krishna consciousness. When one is actually Krishna conscious, he automatically loses his taste for pale things. So it's a question of Keshwarupu. It's not a question of Keshwarupu, but there's something I wanted to ask you.
I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Okay. Thank you. So they're only, in other words, they're external restrictions to make you do something, to make you do something that you don't have exactly a taste for doing, and not doing something that you do have a taste for doing. But once you actually have a taste for the right thing, the external restrictions are not required because you're internally motivated.
I was just wondering about the term good.
Yes.
It sounds like it means good in the sense of requirement.
Yes.
Rather than good as opposed to bad.
Yes, yes, thank you. Good, careful hearing, thank you. Any other questions? Yes, please.
Only this higher case, is it bestowed upon us by mercy, or can we cultivate on our own?
Both are required. We have to do our part, which is the cultivation, because Krishna Anushilanam means cultivation. There is a bhakti yoga is a process of cultivation, but it's less mechanical than dependent on mercy, actually. But there is no reason for Krishna to give us mercy. He's not impelled, inclined to give us mercy, unless we do our part. Even getting wealth in this material world, we have to work, but it's not actually dependent on work. Because sometimes there are people who work very hard and end up in debt like anything, who are very, very intelligent. So in the material world, our success isn't dependent on our work, but work is, what is it called, necessary but not sufficient. So similarly, our process of cultivation is necessary, but it's not sufficient to make our advancement. We need mercy. So how to cultivate the mood that attracts mercy? That's Mahaprabhu's teachings also. The process is given, but part of the process is Trinada Pisana Chaina and pleasing our spiritual master, and pleasing, that's part, these are built into the process too. Sometimes it happens that someone becomes wealthy without any work, right? They inherit billions and billions of dollars from their forefathers, parents and forefathers. But what does that mean? That means they've done the work in a previous life and they're just collecting the interest now. So we have to make our endeavor, but our endeavor alone is insufficient. It's necessary but not sufficient. So just knowing that makes us more humble. And still doing it. Is that just like if there's a little boy as old as your little boy, and he wants, and there is a big weight in your house. How old is Sean now?
Three.
Okay, so he's 3 years old. And there's a weight in the house, even a heavy weight. And he goes to lift it. And he has no capacity to lift it. And you see him, of course you have a bad back, so you may not be able to do more than, but when you see him trying to lift it, you'll say, Okay, Sham, try again. Mm-hmm. Okay, oh, you're doing really well, Sham. Yeah, you're so strong. Okay, yeah, you're doing really well. Very good, you're so strong. So, because of his endeavor, you were inclined to do it. If he wasn't interested in lifting it, you wouldn't have any interest in helping him. So the endeavor is important, but it's not sufficient. So how to attract that kind of relationship? You have to have that kind of relationship that makes the Supreme inclined to do the real part of the work. Our part of lifting is actually, what can a 3-year-old boy lift? So how to get that? That's a meditation for the devotee.
If one wants to get that, one would enjoy the gym.
Well, what's the parallel of it?
Weights
And when you're in the gym, what's your inspiration? No, no, that's like joining the temple. You see, people are serious about the same endeavor. And then you see someone who started, who was weaker than you, than you began, and now, look at those muscles. And that gives us some hope.
Where does the concept of mercy fit into that? Because now I've joined the gym, now I'm really strong myself, I can lift that, and I can lift that, and this is work, so what's the problem?
But where is the ability coming from? Oh, you're talking going back to the gym one.
Going back to the mercy one, you're asking what attracts mercy. Does it attract mercy to join the gym and get physically fit and know how to lift weights?
You know, but you should always remember that you're dependent. There is in the Olympics, every once in a while, or at least one time, there was one marathon runner. I mean, he ran, the marathon. They were competing like that. It's 26 miles or something like that. And then he won. And when he got to the finish line, he just fell down and began praying. He was acknowledging, I did, he trained, you know, he did everything. But he was acknowledging without the mercy of God that, because in 1 second, in half a second, Superman can't even move his hands if that's withdrawn from him. That we shouldn't forget, whether we join the gym or the temple, that ultimately always we're independent. Excuse me, I just was seeing if anyone was listening. I could be giving such a wonderful class and say completely the wrong thing, and then Krishna wants to tell me how. Then I'm dependent. We're all completely dependent, and that's what causes us to give ourselves to Krishna, surrender. That when we realize that deeply, how dependent in fact we are. You're making jokes, aren't you? Jesus. Yeah. Okay. So if we move into the go into the temple, if we go into the gym, associate with the people, and then we start thinking I'm the most powerful, then we get into trouble. We always get into trouble. Because that will cause us to be arrogant. So if you're in the gym and you get arrogant, something's going to happen to you. If you're Krishna's in charge of this one, and he's doing that throughout the world. As soon as anyone becomes proud and arrogant, pride goeth before the fall. As soon as someone becomes proud, arrogant, they have to taste, by Krishna's kindness, the bitterness of the pain and bitterness of losing one's ability or position, etc. It's built into, it's hardwired into the material world. Okay, 9:00. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhakti ki jai.